Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome, lions and lionsettes and lion things and lion beings to, oh my god, I don't even know what we're going to do here. Welcome to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, prideofdetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. As I say every week, you know where to find us, homie? You know where to find us? Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. I'm told they're the same. Maybe. I don't know. You're not going to catch me snitching. Google Podcasts. And iHeartRadio app, and probably other apps too, I don't even know about. I'm Chris Perfett, Mr. Almost Perfect, here, your host into a very bizarre Lions takeoff. Jeremy Reisman is my partner, the fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. I'm at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T, no spaces, no hyphens, no nothing. Jeremy, we were really excited 7 days ago.
Really more like 3 hours ago.
You were off the walls. You were off the walls, man. What happened? We'll
Lions
get into
football
it.
Happened, man.
Well, Lions football happened. You've already sent me a note saying, let's just get through this. But I refuse. We will have a very good show for you as the Lions. We'll get to that in 1 second. Real quick, though. Third man, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore P-O-D with his doggo here. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I don't know if you noticed, but my dog briefly exited stage left, went over to near the lamp, and did the equivalent of what the Lions did in the fourth quarter and stared at me while he took a piss. So,
what's the dog's name? What's the dog's name? Just so we can credit him on this.
That would be Goose.
Goose, good job. Good job, mm-hmm. Goose. Mm-hmm. Lions 27, Arizona Cardinals 27. You heard it. You heard that right. We have a tie in week one. And I don't know how I'm watching the reaction stream. You would have thought the Lions just went 0-16. We're going to tell you why they're not. We're going to try to give you some silver linings, but this one's a rough one to swallow. And there's some rough truths to handle as well as I don't know what happened in the fourth quarter as the Lions suddenly took it on the chin from Cliff Kingsbury and pirate football as taught by Mike Leach and Texas Tech by way of Kyler Murray, who apparently discovered Hamon energy at the last second. That's a JoJo reference. Jeremy, you're mad. I want to give you the floor first before I jump in, because I feel like if I talk anymore, you're going to reach through that computer and punch me in the face.
I'm not mad. I'm sick. I'm sick. It's, I don't know. I mean, and at some point I almost tweeted this out and I knew better not to, and I'm glad I didn't, but I was just like, I was going to literally tweet out the words 2019 season opener, greater than 2018 season opener.
Wow. Well, I mean, I put my foot in it in that, what was it, Dick Stockton, to enter the fourth quarter, said the Lions aren't out of the woods just yet. And I said, they are out of the woods.
Yeah.
And everyone's killing me for that. Good call. Good call. Even when I'm the pessimist, I'm wrong.
But I mean, and we'll get into it later and I'll be a little more calm later and talk about why this team isn't the 2018 version. There's a lot of things to take away that are positive from this game, but it's frustrating as hell when you look like the better team for three quarters. You clearly have pretty much an advantage in just about every matchup of this game, and then the coaches blow it for you. That's exactly what happened. It's frustrating as hell that a team that is so disproportionately better than another team and showed it for 50 minutes in this game have it all fucking torn down. I'm sorry about throwing the F-bomb around, but having
wow,
it all
look
torn
at you.
down. in the last 10 minutes of the game because this team got soft, this team got complacent, this team decided they wanted to establish a run in a game they weren't establishing the run in. They decided they wanted to play soft coverage even though they were dominating Kyler Murray for 50 minutes and said, let's just give up the underneath stuff as long as we don't give up any big plays. And then guess what? You gave up big plays anyways. And so now here we're sitting at 0-0-1, which by all means might as well just be 0-1 because you blew a game against a crappy opponent in the last 10 minutes.
So what you're saying is, do I get the win on the predictions then?
No one gets the win because the Cardinals didn't win. No one gets a win.
Nobody wins. Nobody loses either. Nobody wins.
Because you know what? Cardinals fans are right now are like, ooh, Kyler Murray, he's actually kind of good. We got a good future. Throw that in the window. Anyone can play well against the prevent defense. Get out of here.
Yeah, so that's the big story here is we're going to get into that fourth quarter and we'll work our way backwards because, as I said, entering into the fourth quarter, it was 17 to... No, wait.
They scored that Hockenson touchdown to go up 18 points, 24-6.
It was 24-6, excuse me. I'm already sweating here. And like that was it. Like that's where it should have been. Bam, you're good. I don't know what the hell happened after that. As you said, Jeremy, the Lions inexplicably started playing prevent defense with 9 minutes to go. If you've watched a minute of football anywhere, you know that the words prevent defense coming out of my mouth is preceded with, oh, and then you lost the lead. And you would be right. The Lions, for a briefly moment, did lose the lead. And then somehow, and I think our B block, Jeremy, is just going to be on this, is that bewildering timeout that happened, which
can
took
we
the
not
ball.
Do a whole segment on that, please.
No, not a whole segment, but like, I don't know what happened there, and we're going to get into that in a second because I think that belies the fact that the coaching staff is the big story out of this because suddenly Stafford looked like he had the game to the play to ice the game, and you took the ball out of his hands by calling a timeout. I don't know who. Do we even know who called the timeout? Was it Bevel?
It's unclear right now because the TV broadcast certainly seemed to assume it was Bevel, and there was a replay that kind of looked like he did it. At the end of the post-game press conference, Patricia did what a head coach does and took responsibility for it, mm-hmm. said he technically called it, but and rules state that an offensive coordinator can't call a timeout, but that doesn't mean that he didn't influence Matt Patricia's decision to call one. Or, you know, if your offensive coordinator on the play of the game is screaming in your ear to call a timeout, you're probably going to call a timeout.
Ryan, before I get to my monologue, do you have any points? Do you have a monologue of your own? Any thoughts here?
Oh, no, I don't have a monologue. So by all means, go ahead.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on this game or are you just dead?
Oh, I have plenty of thoughts, but we'll get to those.
Okay. Let me start with the positive. Lions fans, hi, let's sit down. Let's talk for a second. I know you hate talking to me. I know Jeremy wishes I wasn't even here right now. I have been laughing like a maniac on Twitter, and that's all I can really do. That's all I've been able to do for 12 years of Lions football. I know people like to say I'm not a fan, but this is my coping mechanism deal. Lions fans, let's start. This isn't the end of the world. This isn't 0-16, and as Jeremy said, this isn't 2018 either. You didn't even have the worst game of the day. That belongs to the Dolphins, who looked like they were a Sunbelt team getting their ass whooped by Alabama, all right? And now everyone wants out of Miami. The first time people in their lives have said, I want to leave Miami, that wasn't related to money, all right?
Or Hurricanes.
Or Hurricanes, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. You know, we could just shoot at the Hurricane. You know, that's an idea. But you can't come in and play this one off either. This was a week one where, like, this is week one. We've known from the past, week one, you can't trust week one. But the failures out here are kind of astronomical to take away. And I'm not going to, I mean, this game had everything where you just, I'm not saying lose faith in the team, but if you're pessimistic about the team, this had something for you. This was a smorgasbord of that. We saw Stafford nearly give away the game in overtime, even though he was the reason why the Lions were still in it. which is like both sides of Stafford. We got good Stafford and bad Stafford here. We've got a coaching staff calling a timeout inexplicably out of nowhere, not trusting Stafford to do the good Stafford part of this. You have your offensive line disintegrating in front of our eyes. Taylor Decker is awful. Taylor Decker is absolutely atrocious right now. And you have, once again, the Lions playing prevent defense with 9 minutes to go. There's so much to unpack here. Danny Amendola didn't even run out of bounds when he needed to in overtime. I mean, they weren't going to probably get anywhere close to another Matt Prater field goal with the time left, but at least you lost them the chance to even get there. Here's the deal. 17 games in with this coaching staff, and this fan base has no faith in any of it. I don't know what else to say. Like, this is bewildering. This was like the worst way you could end your offseason and come into this regular season. Here's the thing with ties. They're not losses. However, depending on the context, they can absolutely feel like one. That's always the line I've said when people are like, oh, how can you have ties in soccer? That's it. It's the context of it. You're feeling the context right now. The context is that you are up big in this game and it's gone. And so it feels like a loss. It feels like the biggest loss possible. But you didn't lose. The NFC North looks bad outside of Minnesota right now. They had a good game against the Falcons, but I don't think I put any stock in the Falcons. The Bears and Packers looked atrocious on Thursday night. So there's hope, but we've been talking about the front line of the schedule, and this was supposed to be the one win that you could at least count on to give yourself a cushion. And man, I don't know where we start other than that. Like, I mean, there's silver linings. We're getting into them. Hockenson looks fantastic. Hockenson was setting records out there. Hockenson looks like the 8th overall pick. But then, as I mentioned, Taylor Decker. I mentioned good, bad, Jekyll and Hyde, Stafford. Rashawn Melvin might be hurt. Danny Amendola made mistakes. The running game was absolutely not established in this game. It looks sloppy to start the season, and you just hope a lot of it is week one, and you're just hoping that the tie is just the embarrassment on the front of it all, that it's no more than that. I'm not going to throw away the Lions on a tie. However, I will say that I can't ask anyone to be confident right now either. Like, I can't do either side of it right now. I'm not saying, hey, if you're confident in this team, I'm not telling you, you need to bail. But if you're pessimistic about this team, I'm not telling you to buck up and get back in here. Because you can take, because in a tie, it can go either way. You can take either way you want out of it.
Here's what I'm going to say about all that. I'm confident in the players. I really am. I really think the Lions have a good set of guys outside of maybe Taylor Decker that played well.
The defensive coverage looked so good. It looked a lot better. Yeah.
This defense didn't give up a touchdown until less than 10 minutes left in the game.
After they started playing prevent defense.
Right. Yes. And the coaching thing. This is why coaching is. But here's the ultimate problem is even though I'm confident in this talent, I'm not confident in this coaching staff. And I've said this before. I've said, you know, I don't necessarily agree with their approach to, you know, running the ball and establishing the run and stopping the run as their main things. We actually didn't see that a lot today. Like there were times, yes, they tried to establish the run mainly late in the game, but they threw the ball a hell of a lot this game. So that was promising. But when it comes to managing the clock, when it comes to late game decisions, I know for a fact that me and Matt Patricia do not see eye to eye. And today was a check mark in my column because he tries to play where let's just not make a mistake. Let's ride the very mere percentages and say, as long as we don't make a mistake, we'll ride out this win. Maybe it looks bad. Maybe it looks close at the end, but we're, you know, the percentages say, you know, 51%, as long as we just kind of ride this out, we're going to be fine. But that's just an old way of thinking you'll run out the clock, thinking you'll play conservatively when that works in a era of football in which everyone's running the clock. Everyone takes 7 minutes to get a touchdown drive. That's not how the NFL works anymore. You can go down the field in 2 minutes. You can have a one mistake, whether it's, you know, Jalen Reeves may been falling down in coverage, giving up a 25-yard touchdown. Suddenly your bend don't break defense isn't bend don't break at all. It's bend for 2 seconds and then break immediately, and suddenly they have one more drive in to tie the game. I don't like the coaching philosophy of this. It's the same, honestly, it's the same coaching philosophy problems that I had with Jim Caldwell. Is he just loved to ride that tiny margin of error way to a victory? And sorry, football's weird. Margins, you can't ride a thin margin of error because even good players are going to make mistakes. And Danny Amendola is a perfect example. Had a great game, all game, made a dumb mistake at the end. It happens. So you have to just drive the stake into their hearts at any point and never give up on the gas.
Never
and
take your foot off the throat. Never take the foot off the throat.
It's such a dumb cliche, but it's so right in this instance. It really is. And it's something that's not, Matt Patricia is not going to change. He's made it very clear he's not going to change. So what the Lions are going to have to do is just play perfect football. I don't know if such a thing even exists, but they're going to have to somehow play perfect football.
There's no
especially
such
once
thing.
They start playing good teams.
Listen, it's the third quarter right now. New England is on Sunday Night Football. New England is like 20-0 on Pittsburgh. I don't think New England's going to take their foot off the gas anytime soon. But like, yeah, you're right, Jeremy. Like,
you're making an assumption after one half of football again. What happened last time you did that?
What happened to me? What happened to me? Listen, man, I was looking at the box score too. Larry Fitzgerald had like, what, 17 yards going into that fourth quarter? And now he's the receiving leader on the day for the Cardinals, 113 yards. Suddenly, Larry Fitzgerald, remember, he's Larry Fitzgerald. Suddenly, Kyler Murray remembered he was the first overall pick in the NFL. I don't get it, man. Even my Texas Tech friend is like, how did you lose to Cliff Kingsbury? I'm like, no, we tied. And it's like, that's worse. And I just shrugged and threw up my hands. I don't know what else to say right now. I had my computer crashed and I lost all my notes from this game. And all I can say again is those points that I've hit. This isn't the end of the world, but it feels just so bad. It feels once again that all the ammunition is right there to start the season to say, hey, Lions, this is bad. Like, and that's it. It's like the Lions just don't get these seasons to start out right for them. And it creates perceptions and it creates pessimism. And I think it's frustrating, but at the same time too, I don't think there's, as you say, Jeremy, the real reasons are there. And I can't sit here and say you should believe in the Lions because they're not really giving you a lot of, this coaching staff in particular is not giving you a lot of reasons to believe in them. And once again, you bring up that coaching staff, Jeremy. That's why I think that timeout is so symbolic of what this game was for the Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford is driving. Matthew Stafford is about to win you the game, and they don't trust him. They don't trust him, and they call a timeout. And that's the story.
Sad story.
Ryan, you have a bunch of notes, and we've got a few minutes here before we got a break, so please get to them.
Sure. So I think one thing that really stands out to me from this game, and I tweeted about it really early on, is I talked about, or I sent out a tweet that said Matt Patricia would be so happy with this game ending 3-0. As long as he could find a way for every possession to end up in a punt or a turnover on downs or whatever it may be, if this game could end up 3-0 and Matt Patricia could just skate out of Arizona with a win, he would be so entirely gleeful with it. And I think that even some people would probably be a lot happier now if the game would have ended up 3-0 and the Lions would have came out with a win rather than a tie. And you talked about it a lot. The context matters, right? So knowing that this game was locked up, it was, what, 24-6, right?
Yep.
24-6 after the Hockenson touchdown. And it really seemed like there was not a snowball's chance in hell that the Cardinals would come back. And Chris, you said things like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald only had so many yards receiving until the fourth quarter, and then they got the ball rolling. And then Kyler Murray remembered he was the number one overall pick. I don't know if I believe in any of that. I think I believe in the thing that Jeremy talked about, and you talked about it as well. But like the Lions just, they stopped playing the game that they were playing on defense, and they decided to play prevent. They decided to play the clock.
Yep.
They stopped playing the Cardinals and they started playing the clock. And that was the most frustrating thing about this game. is they chose to play the clock up 24-6 on the road.
Over 10 minutes left.
And they were, and one of my favorite tweets of the night was from Kevin Clark from The Ringer. And he said, Arizona Detroit is what we thought it would be. And this was early, this was at 6:15. So mind you, this was 2 hours into the 4 hour like Titanic game that we watched.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, Arizona Detroit is what we thought it would be. The debut of a forward thinking offensive mastermind on the cutting edge of the sport. But enough about Daryl Bevel. Daryl Bevel. Well, I thought Daryl Bevel called an incredible game from start to until
start to timeout.
Until the Lions started playing the clock. And at that point, I don't know who's making the call. Is Patricia saying, hey,
we don't know.
Hey, it's
like I said,
it's time to start playing the clock. It's time to go into your playbook and let's run the football. Or is that Daryl Bevel making that call?
Go on, Jeremy.
Here's the absolutely tragic thing about the timeout is that it negated what I thought was actually an aggressive play call. They could have run. I thought they were going to run the ball there and run the ball to the 2 minute warning. Instead, Daryl Bevel calls a genius play and it was going to work.
He got the first down. It was going to ice the game.
Yeah. It literally would have ended the game. And it was an aggressive play call. We wouldn't be talking about coaching at all right now. It'd be like, you know what? Lions had a pretty good debut. It got a little bit scary at the end there, but Daryl Bevel is a hero. Matthew Stafford is on fire. TJ Hockenson is amazing. Our defense looks pretty good, too. That's the whole storyline if it isn't for a timeout. That's it. So, I mean, yes, if you want to live in that, you know, alternate reality, then sure, there are reasons to be happy. But it's just so frustrating that something so small, and this is what the NFL is, and also why you can't live on the razor's edge between a win and a loss and just keep freaking playing. Is this one time out? It ruins everything.
I don't want
the
to
entire narrative of the game.
I don't want to essentialize the game, but it really feels like this was a moment here. And look, man, I know Bernie was on with us for the Vegas thing, and he says it comes down to five plays every game. Maybe those we could probably go back there and count what those five plays are and maybe confirm his thesis or not. I don't know what else to say. If you had Arizona plus 2.5, congratulations, somehow, I guess. Other than that, man, we're going to take a break here. I'm going to collect my thoughts. We're going to come back, keep digging into this game. As we've been saying a lot, there are some positives from this game, and I feel like we need to look a little bit on the bright side of life. But at the same time, too, we're going to be talking a lot about this throughout the show. It's frustrating. It's funny, to me at least. It's not what we've expected, and yet at the same time, it's par for the course sometimes when it comes to these Lions, especially with this coach. And it's a big story about this coaching staff. And I'll just say this one part, Jeremy, and you can agree with me or say I'm overreacting on this, and we'll argue about it on the other side. What the Lions need from the coaching staff right now is someone to show some leadership. That's a shrug. It's not a visual medium. We've been installing cameras. We're going to work on some fun stuff for this podcast this year. We're going to have this recording live on Twitch very soon. Jeremy just shrugged when I told him that. I was waiting for a reaction. He just shrugged. So he's not even getting me. He shrugged again. He's not even going to.
I don't know. Like, what is leadership? What is that? That's such an intangible thing that
I know
doesn't
I know.
Mean anything to
it,
me.
We could dissect it 50 ways, but I mean, I'm just, that's like the starting thesis, and I'm asking us to work the way down. But let's take a break. Let's get some drinks. Let's cool a little bit, dig deeper into this game, and maybe look ahead to what's coming up next, because the NFL is on fire right now, and the Lions are part of that fire. Be right back here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Pride of Detroit, PODcast. We're back here, baby. Rolling again. You can't stop us. Let's talk about the one bright side of this game, at least the biggest bright side for me. And that was TJ Hockenson. Look, I doubted a lot coming into this season because I'm like, don't preseason training camp. I can't buy it. It's fake football. Hockenson was real today. He was absolutely real out there. 131 yards. He broke the record for rookie tight ends. I believe in their first game. Is that what it was, Jeremy? It was a very specific stat. Yeah. Yep. For you know,
most tight yards in a rookie's debut.
Yep. 131, averaging almost 22 yards, 9 targets, a touchdown. Ryan, the Lions have something special with Hockenson, especially when it comes to his Stafford's ability to really trust him with the ball.
Oh, yeah, totally. He was targeted early and often, and that was something that was not super surprising to me, but Stafford tried to make a couple throws where he threw a couple of balls to Hockenson in some pretty tight windows that really showed like how much trust he had in him, because while he's really good at creating separation, like I said, there were a couple of passes that Stafford made to Hockenson that seemed like something that maybe you wouldn't put on a rookie in his very first game on the road, you know, playing the Arizona Cardinals. So everything else about his game though was awesome. Catching, running afterwards. He had a couple of really good blocks.
Mm-hmm. The Amendola play.
Yep, the Amendola play. I mean, there was even the other Amendola catch where Amendola didn't do very good in terms of awareness today. He didn't have that one big catch and touchdown, but there was another play where he had TJ Hockenson as a blocker along the sidelines and just decided to go out of bounds.
It was foreshadowing about what he wouldn't do later in the game.
Yeah, but Hockenson was obviously a huge bright spot. I think he was far and away, aside from Tracy Walker, and we can get into his play too, but I thought he had an incredible game. But I think that TJ Hockenson was definitely the bright spot of Sunday's tie.
And you bring in that trust factor between him and Stafford, and I don't think there's a play that's more emblematic of that than his touchdown, right? It was just, yes. He kind of threw up a jump ball. It's just like, you're big. I know anything that I throw within a 3 feet radius of you is going to be caught. Go up and catch it in your first game, rookie. He did it. And man, that felt like it should have been the dagger in the game, and it would have been a perfect cap to the night. Cause that was the one that set the record. That was the one that put him up 18 points. It felt like a perfect way to end the night because things were rolling. You heard me over the past month, just how excited I've been about TJ Hockenson and just how excited for you guys to finally see him. And you guys finally saw him, and he made a huge play in the fourth quarter, and it doesn't even matter.
Look, man, I had Iowa fans tell me this guy's going to be special. Even though we had like other people who are like, hey, I don't know what to think about TJ Hockenson. Iowa didn't have much of an offense. I'm like, okay, but that's, you know, we've known what he can do, and he absolutely showed it. And as I've said for years, what has Stafford always trusted? He trusts the safety blanket receiver. He loves the safety blanket. And ever since it went to Calvin Johnson to Anquan Boldin, that safety blanket has been inside. It's been an inside receiver. It was Anquan Boldin, then it was Golden Tate on short routes, and now it's TJ Hockenson.
And Danny Amendola.
And stop it. I don't
104 yards.
I don't trust this game out of Amendola, man. Maybe after next week, maybe I'll be saying, hey, I'll eat crow on Amendola. Right now, hey, though, man, it's not his stat line that bothers me about Amendola. It's the mental awareness of some of the plays he made.
I'm just going to assume those are out of character because he's a 55-year-old receiver or whatever he is. I'm just going to say, you were doubting Hockenson after he dropped one preseason pass, and I told you
I wasn't doubting him. I was just saying, hey,
you
isn't that weird?
Absolutely.
I was not doubting him. I was saying, hey, isn't that weird how that works?
I've been touting Amendola all offseason too, and thinking, you know what? This could be a career year for him because he's already developing a chemistry with Matthew Stafford. It's off to a pretty darn good start because I think he doesn't have more than like 650 or so career yards in a season.
Uh-huh.
He's already a sixth of the way there. one game into the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. You have a standout, Jeremy, do you have a standout player from the... Okay, I'm trying to figure out the defensive side, because I was going to say Jalen Reeves-Maben was my guy, but he did fall down on that play for the touchdown. So, I mean...
There's a couple.
I think there were some good plays all around. Jelani Tavai got a sack, which was cool.
He did.
And justified a lot of things. Quandre Diggs balled out his brains. The one note I was going to have before this game went off the ground was that there were at least 10 passes defended by the Lions against Kyler Murray. But at the same time, that might just be Kyler Murray's size at the end of the day. He's less than 6 feet tall.
There were a lot of bad passes in this game, but you kind of lead me into what I think is my big standout of the game, and I think that's Rashawn Melvin on defense. Mm. He had 3 of the 11 passes defended that the Lions had in this game and looked really, really good as an outside receiver for, 3.5 quarters of this game. That's been, I think, the Lions' biggest source of consternation, of stress with this defense, is who's going to be that number two cornerback. And Rashawn Melvin had a quiet but solid preseason and training camp, and he was good tonight. He was not okay, not bad, not Nevin Lawson. He was good. And I think that gives me a little bit of hope going forward.
And I think we need that out of him, especially after the showing we had from Jamal Agnew, who definitely falls into the losers in this conversation.
For a lot of reasons.
And by the way, we can say this was a pretty quiet night for Darius Slay as well, too. Like, I think that's by design. They weren't throwing to him, but still, there were some plays where I'm like, why isn't Darius Slay covering Larry Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
But, I mean, once again, that goes for everything. Yeah, and that goes back to some of the coaching, too. Like, Darius has got to play where they tell him to play.
Yep.
So, any other standouts we want to talk about? Can we talk about Stafford? Because, again, I've been characterizing him as Jekyll and Hyde. Maybe I'm being unfair because, there was that play at the end of the game that could have been a pick six in overtime that would have ended it right there and then. But outside of that, this was a pretty good game for Stafford.
It was a pretty good game. I think all things considered, the fact that a sieve would have done a better job at left tackle today than what Taylor Decker put forward.
More on him in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and Rick Wagner is really, I mean, he shouldn't be safe from criticism either, because he had his hands full with Chandler Jones too. I don't want to underestimate how good those two players are. Terrell Suggs drinks from the fountain of youth. He's still good, even though he's so long in the tooth. And Chandler Jones is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. So it's not like Wagner and Decker were up against chopped liver, but I think that definitely had an effect on Stafford's play, and the times in which Stafford looked really good was when he would step up in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of plays that he made with the lower half of his body that set up an opportunity for him to make the throws that we know that he can make. And that was the good Stafford. I think a lot of the bad Stafford was brought out by poor offensive line play. And then I truly think in overtime, he just had to been frustrated as all hell. I don't know how anybody could really go into overtime and not be so completely frustrated with the fact, because I think somebody either said that they heard or something, that either you could hear Stafford or you could read his lips when he said something about saying trust me.
Trust me. He's literally saying trust me. He's screaming trust me on the sidelines.
Yeah. So, I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah, my point is that, if you are an NFL quarterback, you've got to shake that off, though. That's it. I mean, I get it if the frustration's in you, but at the same time, if that was my quarterback, I'd say, look, man, you got to shake that off. You got to be like an MLB pitcher. They hit a home run on you, but just get ready and just get back in it again. Don't fall apart. Get back in the game.
He still went out there and played, but
oh, he did.
I mean,
he did.
Even think about the things. I mean, he took a lot of hits too. I mean, he had 2 fumbles, 1 that he lost, which was
he took 3
super
pretty
critical.
Big sacks too.
That fumble that he gave up, that he coughed up, literally the play after Tracy Walker got that interception in Arizona's territory. That was, I mean, that's another play where you can, if you want to talk about those 5 plays that make a difference, Chris. But I understand his frustration. And I agree that you have to be tough-minded and you have to go back out there and you're only as good as your last play. But some of these plays that, I mean, like Danny Amendola, what are you doing not going out of bounds? You're not even giving you're not even giving Matt Prater, a guy who can probably make a 60-yard field goal in the clutch, because we've seen him do it before. You're not even giving him a chance.
In dry air, in dry desert air too, he would have absolutely had that leverage on that. Like nothing was stopping him.
Yeah, the one from 55 that he hit at the beginning of the game would have been good from 65.
Yeah. Real quick before we get to the offensive line, one more name we got to call out. Trey Flowers.
Pretty quiet night from him.
Right up until he got the flag thrown on him, I believe. Was it the flag? Or
yeah,
am I?
He got a personal foul on the game tying drive for the Cardinals. Yeah.
Come on, man. It can't be that.
It was a weird day from the defensive front because, and again, this might have just been a coaching thing, but they were providing a little bit of pressure and making Kyler Murray run. And one guy I was going to mention as a positive was certainly Devon Kennard. 3 sacks in this game. Looked almost as fast as Kyler Murray at times, but then it all disappeared in the second half. And Mike Daniels, 0 sacks and 1 tackle today.
But that's the thing, too, is like when this defensive line, like, it's not that they can't just have a good game, but like we know how bad the offensive line for the Cardinals is.
Right. Yep.
Like we know that it's bad. Like you should be feasting on them. And they just did. They did all right, but they could have done so much more. I will say this, Kyler Murray, watching Kyler Murray scramble sometimes is kind of funny. I don't think he's picked up how to really slide in the NFL yet. Remember how he was like, he looked like he could slide for that first down and he got spooked and started going backwards. So credit on the Lions for spooking him, I guess. All right. Now let's tear off the bandage and talk about the offensive line.
I mean, I don't know what to say about Taylor Decker's performance. I don't want to harp on the guy because one bad performance. And I know we all came into questions this game talking about the guard position and interior. And at one point I was like, well, you got to remember about these tackles. There's a lot of questions about whether Taylor Decker can come back and play at the level he did his rookie year. And there's a lot of questions about Rick Wagner. And you can shake off their performance all you want and say, hey, it's Terrell Suggs. Hey, it's Chandler Jones. Those are two great talents. Here's the problem with it. The Lions play in the NFC North.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Khalil Mack on their schedule twice. They've got Everson Griffin on their schedule twice. They've got Green Bay's defense, who looked a hell of a lot better with, you know, Zadarius Smith, I think is his name. And they got two new pass rushers, and they were giving Mitchell Trubisky hell on Thursday night. This is a really good division when it comes to defensive linemen, especially edge guys. So if Taylor Decker is going to help keep this team afloat, he's going to have a hell of a lot of better performance, because you could tell by the end of the game, they were in his head. He was false starting because he couldn't keep up with Terrell Suggs, a guy 10 years older than him. And he was holding, and it's just like, it was rough. It was really rough. And Ryan mentioned it, just that strip sack that happened right off the tails of Tracy Walker interception. I mean, that's taken points off the board. Lions could have taken 3 knees there and gotten a field goal. And instead, the very first play, lose that. So, I think something that maybe a lot of us are overlooking right now is just how bad the running game was. We're talking about this team that wanted to establish the run, that had a chance to run out the clock a couple times with the run. Kerryon Johnson didn't have a carry over 9 yards. He averaged 3.1 yards per carry. This team didn't have a run over 10 yards, except for Matthew Stafford on that odd play in which he kept it. 3.6 yards per carry overall, not good enough against what I think was just kind of an okay Cardinals front, especially on the interior. So they got some work to do there. I'm happy with Daryl Bevell. I'm happy with how the offense looked overall, but this isn't exactly the kind of offense that I think Matt Patricia wants, in that they're not running the ball very well and Stafford's almost getting killed.
It was just kind of like a head scratcher. It was a bit of a head scratcher the way that they approached the running game, though. You know what I mean? Like, Jeremy, you and I were watching the game and I made comment. I noticed and made a comment. I can't remember if it was first quarter or second quarter, but I was like, where's Kerryon Johnson? It almost seemed like they were going running back by drive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you're going to see. Like, I think people may have underestimated how much of a role CJ Anderson will play in this offense.
Yeah.
And the coaching staff has been saying it all offseason. Like, we're not going to overwork Kerryon Johnson. And that's going to frustrate a lot of people because he got 16 carries and CJ Anderson had 11. So they're right there neck and neck. And technically CJ Anderson was a little more efficient with his runs, but this is going to be a 1A, 1B situation. And obviously Kerryon Johnson is the A to CJ Anderson's B, but this is a running back by committee. And sorry, fantasy owners, you're not going to like it.
Yeah, and I think I only call it a head scratcher just because I didn't see it playing out that way. But let's make one thing clear: CJ Anderson is not LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, but early in the game, it kind of felt like it a little bit because the Lions didn't convert on those third and ones early. Not that it was CJ Anderson's fault. I mean, he's got so much better vision than LeGarrette Blount does, and he showed it a little bit later in the game. But I mean, those third and ones, I think, are really important to remember and in terms of just how poorly this offensive line was, because the key, I think, to Matt Patricia's offense and really overall scheme for him to be kind of this conservative mindset, you have to be able to run the ball late in games. And they started, like, the first drive, they had two drives in which they could have run a lot of clock. The first one, they went three and out, they couldn't run the ball. Second one, the one with the timeout, they started to run the ball a little bit. It's the first time all game they started to look a little bit better at it. Then the timeout happens and everything else. But if this team is going to succeed and going, because like I said, Matt Patricia's not going to change. This is how he's going to play the end of games. They just need to be better. They just need to perform better. They need to be able to run the clock out. And I don't know if they can with this set of players.
Mm. Two other really frustrating points for me in the game were really early on. And it came to like field position. And I know it was early in the game, Lions are on the road, but the third and one play that Jeremy just mentioned, CJ Anderson up the middle for -1 yards. Lions are at the 40, they're at their own 49 yard line and it's fourth and two. Okay, punt, that's fair, that's fine. But the very next possession, third and six, pass incomplete to Amendola and then punting from Arizona 41. Little bit too conservative for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's early in the game, but we see how those things end up playing themselves out.
All right, let's
get used to it.
Get used to it. Let's take a break. Let's try to look ahead to and try to place this game into the context of what this season is going to be. Sorry, we can't memory hole it. I wish we could. Wish we could take it out back. We're not going to do that. I shouldn't say that when Ryan's out here cuddling his dog. That is a very cute dog. That is a very, very cute dog. I wish people could see this dog.
It's really going to help me get through this tie.
I can tell. All right. Be right back here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Two segments in the book. One more to come. No mailbag this week. We're going to have something to replace mailbag in season. But we need to talk more about this game here. It is the week one kickoff. So all hands on deck. Going hard in the fourth quarter here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Pride of Detroit PODcast, we're in the home stretch. And just to recap again, look, I'm going to reiterate what I said earlier. Lions fans, this ain't the end of the world. And again, you didn't have the worst game of this of the Sunday. I wouldn't even say, like, hold up, I need to look at everything else, because there were a lot of games of depression and agony on Sunday here. Put aside the Dolphins for a second. The Jets gave up a 16-point lead.
To the Bills,
yep. Yep, they gave up a 16-point lead to the Bills. That happened. What was it? Seahawks struggled to put away the Bengals.
But they did.
Oh, my God. That was... Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. Right now, the Patriots, and I feel confident saying this now as the third quarter comes to an end, the Patriots are thrashing the Steelers. Hey, the Browns, everyone's favorite Browns, Ryan's, your former Browns.
Yes, good. Thank you for calling them my former Browns, because they went out there and they laid a turd in Cleveland. Tennessee came in and just handled them.
They really did. Yeah. No, I think people were sleeping on the Titans this year. And Baker Mayfield, 3 interceptions. That's not something you want to see if you're the Browns. That's absolutely not. But back to the Lions for a second. Like, if you want to be pessimistic about it, this game gives you fuel to be pessimistic. You want to be positive about it, maybe you try to find some of the silver linings. The worst thing about the tie is that it's not a win or a loss. So your opinion's not going to really change too much, maybe, but I would say net overall, this is not a game that builds any confidence in this team, but there are 15 more games to go, 16 more weeks. And we need to look around the NFL at what's coming down the pike. Cause Jeremy, like, whatever it was, I thought the Cardinals started playing with fire near the end of this game. But at the same time, too, this was a game where we're like looking on paper. It's like, yeah, this is the one that the Lions need to win. And they didn't. They tied, which in the NFL for 16 games might as well end for no points given for a tie. It might as well be a loss unless it's really close in the NFC North to end the year. Chargers survive today against the Colts. They look fine with Eckler, even without Melvin Gordon. That's going to be a problem next week for the Lions, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. We talked about this all off season, how the beginning of the season looks rough. They face 3 playoff games in the next 3 games. This was a win that they could have certainly had. And now you look at those teams. Like you said, the Chargers, they squeak by in overtime. So maybe not the infallible force that we all thought they were, but they still got the win. Kind of the same story with the Eagles, right? Mm-hmm. They go down early against Washington, come back, mount a comeback. They still kind of squeak by. Not a very convincing 32-27 win, but they got the job done. And then the Chiefs are the Chiefs. The Chiefs didn't really have a problem today. They're obviously one of the toughest teams on their schedule right now. And Lions may have caught a break with Tyreek Hill with his injury. I'm not sure if he's going to be available or not, but Lions are going to have to take at least one of these next 3 games, preferably 2. And yeah. even if they pull 2 out of what look to be upsets in the next 3 games, that only pulls them to 2-2. I was going to say 2-2. 2-1-1.
What I worry about with the Ford Field crowd, Jeremy, especially coming home for the Chargers, is that this game, we talk about confidence and confidence building, making statements for the fans. We've seen this Ford Field crowd turn on their own team quite a few times. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but without that win, suddenly I think people are going to have a lot less patience waiting in those stands.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's
going to
be a very electric crowd.
If the Lions don't start fast, there's going to be some Brooklyn cheers in there for sure. So, or some Bronx cheers, sorry. I mean, even just looking at the line right now, the line for the Chargers game is -3 for LA. That's how much confidence
they're a road favorite.
Have.
They're a road favorite.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Can I say this? I don't care about the fans booing. I don't think it affects the team. I think it looks bad in terms of optics, but if the Lions start slow and get booed, I don't care.
I don't think it's a major thing, but you do see players in. I'm trying to remember the last time the Lions talked about, but I do know it affects players. Players talk about it afterwards that it's like, yeah, it's disappointing that we're getting booed. So it does make an impact.
It makes them feel bad. Some players internalize that and turn it into motivation. Maybe some get sad and disappointed, but I don't care. Like, just go out and play. Just go out and win. Just go and start playing well, and people won't boo.
Is that your best John Gruden impression without wiretapping?
Just play football, man.
Just play
You're
some
a good football.
Football
player.
Has anyone talked about how
Ryan? Hold on.
Okay.
I found out today that Ryan does a very good John Gruden impression, and I know I'm
You've
forcing it now.
You've been holding this from us.
I haven't been withholding it from you. It's just
if you do,
it's just nothing that I've really, I've it's nothing I've entertained doing on the podcast.
The problem is my best coach impersonation is Steve Spurrier, who hasn't been an NFL coach for a hot minute. So, I mean, I'm on the outside here. You've got to do your Gruden.
I'll do my Gruden, but I'll do it at the end. What I want to mention real quick is we talked about players and maybe taking losses to heart. Have you already seen what Snacks put out on Twitter and what CJ Anderson put out on Twitter themselves?
No, I haven't. Let's go to Twitter. Let's go to the twit machine.
I mean, like CJ Anderson put out something like, not my best outing. You know, Snacks said that this loss is 100% on him, that okay. He got outplayed, that the Cardinals, you know, outplayed him. I mean, those are two pretty important players to be coming out on Twitter and saying things like that.
Better dudes. You know how to handle it.
No, I mean, like, I appreciate they're at least taking some responsibility for it. You know, it's not just bogging down or whatever, or going and hiding. Like, they face up to it. We didn't even talk about Snacks on at all in this podcast. I think that's the funny thing.
Can you imagine watching that game and thinking that Snacks was a reason the Lions lost?
No, he was not. He was absolutely not.
I will say this. The Lions' run defense was a minor disappointment. They weren't horrible today, and the stats don't look very good. 4.9 yards per carry and 112 rushing yards for the Cardinals. It's not like the Cardinals were rushing all over them all game, and they held Kyler Murray in check. So one thing they're so good at under Matt Patricia is holding mobile quarterbacks to nothing essentially on the ground. It wasn't a great day for the run defense. The Lions did not lose the game because of the run defense.
No, they didn't lose it because David Johnson did not run all over the Lions. That's not why there's a tie at the end of this game.
No.
We're good, Snacks. We're good. Don't worry. He knew we were coming out with the clubs. What do you make of the NFC North, by the way? Like, we had that. Here's the thing about that Thursday night game. It was a Thursday night kickoff game in week one. I don't take anything out of it. I'm not writing off the Bears. I'm not saying they're awful, and I'm not getting gassed up on Aaron Rodgers. Mitch Trubisky looks bad, but I don't know what to like. That those Thursday night kickoff games are historically so chaotic. I don't have anything to say about it. I really don't. I'd much rather, while talking about the division, talk about the Vikings. But go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth much talking about Maserati Mitch, because I think that we know who Mitchell Trubisky is at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to take – I don't even think it'll take, you know, six more games this season for me to finally put my stamp of this is who Mitchell Trubisky is and this is who he will always be. I just don't see the growth happening for him. Now, Jeremy and I watched the Vikings game together, and there were multiple times when I looked over at Jeremy, I was like, I forgot about Dalvin Cook.
Yep.
And if that guy can stay healthy, did you see the stat line that Kirk Cousins had today?
Yeah, he had, what was it? He was averaging like 10 yards a pass, right?
Yeah.
He didn't get used a lot, if I remember. He only made like, 10, 11 throws or something.
Yeah, this was a football team that won a game today. Their quarterback went 8 for 10 for 98 yards and a touchdown.
Oh my God! Wow.
I mean, you can do that. You can do that when Dalvin Cook runs the ball 21 times for 111 yards, and his backup Madison runs for nine carries for 49 yards, 38 carries for 172 yards on the ground. They absolutely manhandled them, and you know what? The problems and the concerns that the Lions have on the outside protecting Stafford at the tackle position, that's going to be a big problem when they play the Vikings. It'll be a big problem when they play the Bears. It'll be a big problem when they play any team that has any type of formidable pass rush.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the limiting factor when I look at the Lions this year is like, okay, once again, we're going to like really struggle against teams that, you know, maybe we deserve to be struggling against or should be putting away. And then, like, God help us, maybe you steal a game against some of the big heavy hitters out there. It's why I've been so bearish on them right now. Just,
my,
yeah, go on, Jeremy.
It's, it's hard for me to know exactly where the Lions stand right now.
It's week one. It's week one.
Yeah. But the one thing I take from the NFC North, and it's actually a tweet that TJ Lang put out Thursday night, and it's something that seems kind of right, especially after everything that we've seen so far, and that he says, quote, "I think the NFC North has a legit chance to have four of the top 10 defenses this year." I mean, just look at the performance Thursday night. Two really good defensive performances. Obviously, there were some issues on both offensive sides of the ball. Minnesota looks just as good defensively as they ever have. They completely shut down Matt Ryan all day. The 12 points that Atlanta scored were all in the fourth quarter after it was already 28-0. The game was already over. And the Lions defensively look solid. And I would say the Lions of all four of those teams still have more questions than answers because they're facing off against the first time. You know, they're going against a rookie quarterback. They're going against a rookie head coach, all that sort of stuff. But it was certainly a promising debut. The fact that they held the Cardinals to 9 points essentially through three and a half quarters, it's enough to make me think maybe this defense can hold up. They're like we said, they answered some questions at cornerback this day. Devon Kennard looks as good as ever. Maybe there's still some questions on the front seven, but overall, this is just going to be a very defensive heavy division, and I'm curious as to maybe if the Lions can hold up because we saw all the problems on the offensive line today.
We really did. And we saw just problems all around when it comes to the Lions at the end of the day. It's still something I'm unpacking, and I thought I would have it all unpacked by now. And I think that's the problem with a tie, Jeremy. This is the first time we've had to deal with a tie since like what, 83?
Well, yeah, something like
that. Yeah, for the Eagles. Yeah,
somewhere in the 80s. But I mean, it's a fool's errand to pretend that you have everything figured out after week one, no matter what happened. I'm not sitting here saying the Lions are screwed.
Yeah, I'm mostly just talking about this game itself.
Oh.
Like, I keep turning this over and there's a new... It's like one of those paper things where you just keep, like, opening it. I forget what they're
origami.
Called. No, not origami. It's like those little paper diamond things I see girls play with all the time.
Cootie catchers.
I'm sorry, what?
You don't know what a cootie catcher is?
Cootie catcher.
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, fine. Either way, like, I keep looking at this game from another angle and something else pops up in my face. That's the point I'm trying to make. Thank you for making me feel completely out of touch with my feminine side.
I'm a woman. I didn't mean that. I don't know what that was, but
it was a declarative statement. That's what it sounded like.
It was a declarative statement.
I mean, it's like you said, if you're a Lions optimist, you're going to take the first 50 minutes of this game and run with it and say, hey, you know what? This team is actually promising. Daryl Bevel looks pretty good. Defense looks pretty good. Maybe they still have a shot. Yeah, they blew one game, but there's 15 left. If you're a pessimist, you say, hey, this coaching staff's mind is in the wrong place. Their philosophies are going to get this team in trouble in games where they shouldn't get in trouble. They're bound for another 8-8 season because they're living on the razor's edge, and they're going to win some of these games. They're going to lose some of these games.
And once again, the Kool-Aid.
I don't know at this point.
Kool-Aid drinkers or SOL?
This team looks better than they did pretty much all of last season. But yeah, coaching sank them, and it's a coaching problem that I don't think is going to go away. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to just throw my hands up and be like, you know what? Let's just ride the wave here because who the hell knows?
Hey, man, will you please just cut the shit and play football? You're a great football player, man. Just go out there and play football.
Goodbye, everyone. See you, Starside.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.